Certainly.
My name's Kurt Bashir. I'm the Associate Vice President of Educational Management, General Counsel here at Concordia University. On behalf of President Ryan Friedrich and the Board of Regents, we would first like to welcome the Court of Appeals and the attorneys, parties who are here, and all guests and visitors to Concordia University, Nebraska. It's good to have you here today. We're honored to have the Court of Appeals here. You know, I was thinking this morning, it's appropriate, we're in the Tea Life Auditorium. Next door is Family Hall, the original building on campus, built in 1894. And when Concordia opened, the professor, the 12 students, and the professor's wife all lived and studied and worked in the same building. This is kind of what it probably felt like right now at the moment, but we're glad to have everyone here, and we're honored to have the Court of Appeals here. So thank you and welcome.
Thank you very much. We're pleased to be here. My name is Rhett Enbody, and I'm from Wahoo, Nebraska. I'll be the presiding judge today. I am pleased to be joined on this panel. To my right, John Irwin from Omaha. His office is actually in Papillion, but his district encompasses that entire area. And on my left is Judge Frankie. We have a Frankie and that's terrible.
We have a Frankie and a Francie
yes.
on the court.
Yes.
So Frankie is on the afternoon panel. We like to confuse them.
And what's really strange is sometimes they actually do it too. They use the wrong name. So Francie Reedman from Gretna is on my left, and we're pleased to be here this morning. We are going to audio record the cases this morning, so I would advise counsel that if they are talking about any items that they think are of a confidential or sensitive manner, they should keep that in mind, and I would recommend they use initials as opposed to real names. When I call your name, I'll ask counsel to come forward to counsel table, and then I'll call the second time for purposes of keeping track on the tape as to which case we're hearing. Following the four cases that we're hearing this morning, we will have a question and answer session. And with that, we'll start with the InterVision Systems Technology versus Intercall, 14-916. The first case this morning is InterVision Systems Technology, Inc. versus Intercall, Inc. Good morning, counsel. Whenever you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Pat Guinan. I represent the appellant Intercall, Inc. in this matter. Intercall and Appley InterVision entered into a service agreement for audio conferencing services back in April of 2010. And it was for audio conferencing services, and that service agreement set forth the rates that were going to be charged for the services that InterVision used. Starting about January 2011 to March of 2013, InterVision was charged at rates that were higher than what were set forth in the service agreement. Now, during this period of time, InterVision received invoices each month detailing the charges that they were being billed. And at no time during this two-year period of time did InterVision dispute any of these invoices.
The invoices didn't indicate, though, what the unit call was, right? The price?
Sure. The invoices, how they're set up is that there's a gross charge, and then as you go down and drill down to each different page, it sets forth what the charges are being, what charges were for that month for the individual services, whether it's audio conferencing services or special features or whatever else was ordered during that period of time. And so during this two-year period of time, they didn't dispute any of the charges until March of 2013 when they finally disputed that invoice. Eventually, they disputed all the invoices back to January of 2011, and they asked Intercall to reimburse their overages back to January 2011. Intercall agreed to reimburse overages back to January 2013, but not for services for charges prior to January 2013. And the reason that they made that decision not to credit back the overages prior to January 2013 was because under paragraph 3.1 of the service agreement, which Intercall refers to as a look-back clause, it provided that if InterVision had a dispute with any of the charges, that they were required to notify Intercall of any billing disputes within 30 days from the date of the invoice. Otherwise, InterVision hereby agrees to such charges, and Intercall will not be subject to making any adjustments. InterVision filed their lawsuit, and they argued to the lower court, and the lower court eventually found that this look-back clause was a statute of limitations clause. And the lower court relied on the case of Wolfe Farm Bureau Insurance, Farm Bureau, in coming to its conclusion that this was a statute of limitations clause. So the basic issue on appeal here is whether or not this look-back clause is a statute of limitations clause and unenforceable as against public policy in Nebraska, or whether this clause falls into that much broader range of commercial contract clauses, such as other notice provisions or limitations of remedy clauses that have been routinely upheld by the courts in this state.
As I understand your argument, you think they... Appellee should have been able to figure out what the costs actually were. Is that correct? Each month.
Well, our point is that what the contract provides is that they are to look at their invoices, essentially. If they have a dispute, they provide us with notice. And if they don't provide notice of the dispute within the time required under the look-back clause, that those charges are deemed acceptable.
But would a reasonable person be able to go down into the bill to determine whether or not the terms of the contract were being kept?
Certainly. I don't think that there's a problem with that. I think if you look at the invoices themselves, and I put certain invoices, if you look at the December 2010 invoice and you look at the January 2011 invoice, you're going to see that there was higher charges. But if you look at the gross amount, and the invoices were put in that certain way when these higher charges were increased, if you look at even the gross charges themselves, there was a significant bump in those particular months. But yes, you can drill down into there. What it does is you go and it says, here's what your gross charges are. You flip over, it gives you kind of an index as to what the charges were. You go in there and you have, here's your owner number. So Pat Guinan had these conferences on these dates. And it says you used these conferences and here's who called into your conference. And you look at that invoice and you see those particular charges and you see these special rates for these one for the enhanced features. And so it's not unlike any cell phone bill that you have. I mean, you have the gross charges, you have the bigger charges, and it drills down as the pages that you go. And so, yes, you can look at them and interpret them rather easily, but you also have the option, they give you the phone call, the phone number says, or the email address or the website. If you have a dispute, if you have a problem, if you have a question, here's the information, here's how you go to get it. So the more fundamental issue in this case is how is this look-back clause going to be interpreted? And the reason I say that the more fundamental issue is on how these kind of clauses should be interpreted by the courts is because it's InterVision's argument that instead of giving this the clause's plain and ordinary meaning and forcing it to express terms, what they argue is that clauses that have the effect of limiting the time in which a claim in court are in conflict with Nebraska's established public policy. And I believe this is an incorrect premise of law, because what Nebraska courts have said is that contract language that is written in clear and unambiguous language is to be given its plain and ordinary meaning and is to be enforced according to its expressed terms. And so the more fundamental issue here is whether or not we are going to follow that standard and give this look-back clause its plain and ordinary meaning, or whether we're going to deviate from that standard and look at the effect of the clause. So the lower court relies on Wolfe Farm Bureau Insurance in determining that this was an unenforceable statute of limitations clause. But under no fair reading of that case can it be defined or divined, as InterVision suggests, that we got to use or that we should use an effect analysis in coming to this determination as to whether or not this look-back clause is enforceable. Because what Wolf actually said, what the Wolf court holding was, is that a contract which provides that no action shall be brought thereon or for a breach thereof, unless within a time therein specified, which is different from the time at which the statute fixes for bringing an action on such contract, is against public policy. And if looking back at the look-back clause now, giving it its plain and ordinary meaning and looking at its expressed language, it does not attempt to limit the time in which an action can be filed or a lawsuit can be filed. What the look-back clause says is that if there was a dispute on any of the charges, on any of the invoices, that InterVision had 30 days in which to notify Intercall of that dispute. And if they didn't, then those charges were deemed accepted, and Intercall was not subject to making any adjustments to those charges. So the look-back clause does not say that that no action can be filed or contemplate or attempt to limit the time in which an action is filed. What it does is it limits what remedies might be available to InterVision in the event that they don't timely dispute.
Well, all remedies. doesn't it? It would eliminate all remedy. If within 30 days they're not notified that there's a problem.
On billing disputes.
On billing disputes.
Right.
No cause of action could be brought.
Well, certainly you could bring a cause of action. It doesn't prevent the time from bringing the cause of action. I mean,
but
it's,
they couldn't
it's
like, succeed on it.
Right. Just like any, like an exculpatory clause. Like the exculpatory clause in Bedrosky v. Heiner. You can't succeed on that one. You look at a life insurance policy. Any life insurance policy has a notice requirement that within so many months or a year within the date of death, you have to notify the insurance company of the death. Otherwise, you don't get any benefits. It doesn't limit the time in which you can sue an insurance company, a life insurance company, to recover those benefits. But it certainly prevents you from recovering those benefits. So notice requirements, statute or notice requirements in these contract clauses are routinely enforced, and they're routinely upheld. And they don't prevent the time from filing an action like the Wolf v. Farm Bureau case suggests. It just limits what remedies might be available. And that has not been held against public policy in the state. In fact, it has been upheld consistently. I see that I'm within my 2 minutes. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, if that's all right.
You may. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Counsel, whenever you're ready. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Luke Deaver. I'm an attorney out of Holdridge, Nebraska. I have the privilege of representing InterVision Systems Technology and also the privilege to work with my opposing counsel in this case. I believe the parties did a pretty good job in briefing the matter. And what it, to me, in analysis of this case, it comes down to, I would agree, a plain and ordinary meaning of what this section 3.1 of the contract provides, which I just want to reiterate for the court the exact contractual term that's at issue. In the boilerplate of Intercall's contracts, which is a service contract, it says, customer must notify Intercall of any billing disputes within 30 days from the date of the invoice. Otherwise, customer, in this case my client InterVision, hereby agrees to such charges and Intercall will not be subject to making an adjustment. It is InterVision's opinion that the plain and ordinary meaning of that contract term is that all rights to any billing disputes are subject to a 30-day statute of limitations. I would phrase this clause as a limitation clause, not as a look-back clause. The reason why I think it fairly confident as to why it's a limitation clause is you can merely substitute the word billing with the word contract, and it provides light to this. Like I said, this is a service contract. InterVision contracted with Intercall for a 5-cent per minute reservationless telephone services, which was the gist of the contract. There was other rates for other types of services that were provided. They entered into that contract so they had certainty as to what those rates would be going forward. When they received the roughly 70 pages of invoice per month for Intercall that were not broken down per rate, it took them a while to have a team of auditors figure out what the rates were and to figure out that they would be actually charged in excess of their contract rate. Once they notified Intercall of that, Intercall agreed to reimburse them for the previous 30 days. But beyond that, Intercall suggested that 3.1 alleviates them of any liability for those, in this case, up to 2 years worth of overbilling.
So I gather you would take a different position than Intercall, that the unit billing was easily obtainable from those billing records that you got. You have to do some math to get there, right?
Correct. Okay. You have to do, I mean, it's not rocket science math, but you have to do some math because it's not patently obvious that, we agreed at 5 cents. And part of that is Intercall suggested they have several hundreds, if not thousands, accounts payable that they invoice each month. Well, likewise, InterVision, as a company based out of California that does business all over the world, has accounts receivable that it has to audit to. And these things aren't discoverable. It may be the case if you and I had our cell phone bill, we may be able to look through it. But 70-page invoice among the hundreds that they get each day, it takes a while to catch on to these things. And that's where they enter into the contract. And my example on illustrating Section 3.1 is it's a service agreement. So in my opinion, the only thing that could be disputed is the billing. Because if InterVision doesn't use their services, there is no bill. If it uses the services, it's billed per the minute usage that they use their services. So I don't know what other dispute there would be under this service agreement. And so I think you can easily take out the word billing from that Section 3.1, insert the word contract, and it provides full meaning that it would say customer must notify Intercall of any contract disputes within 30 days.
That reading, I think, clearly falls foul of Nebraska's public policy that it is a contractual, it is a statute of limitation clause limiting your right to recover under a contract.
See, when I think of statute of limitations clauses, I think of you have 2 years in which to file suit. Drop dead, doesn't matter what happens, you just have 2 years. Under the contract terms, you still would have 5 years if you give the 30-day notice that's required.
That's correct.
So I see that as a little bit different because it's not cutting down your 5 years on a written contract statute of limitations as long as you do what you need to do within those first 30 days.
Yeah, that's the one distinguishment I can see, but other than a black bold statute of limitation clause like you see in sometimes insurance contracts, is if you provide notice, you reserve the right to file suit within 5 years under Nebraska's statute of limitation. But in effect, 30 days is such an utterly short window for a 70-page invoice that comes out once a month. If you're not acting more diligent than any company that I would work with, you're just going to start waiving those, and in effect, it bars recovery, which, as you said, all the remedies are barred.
So is the question not whether this is a statute of limitations, is the question, is 30 days a reasonable amount of time for a notice provision? Because, as your opposing counsel indicated, notice provisions are upheld. I mean, like the life insurance example that we gave, you have to give notice of the death within a certain amount of time.
Potentially, the reason there's a distinguishment for intervision on the notice provision in that the notice is an action of the third party. In an insurance contract, if you get hit by a third-party truck driver, you have to tell the insurance company under your insurance policy, hey, insurance company, I got hit by a third party 6 months ago. This contract is telling Intercall, hey, Intercall, you overbilled me. So they are not a third party. They are party to the contract. It's distinguishable there. And likewise, an insurance company has a vested interest in knowing as soon as they can so that they can defend the claim and reduce the amount of the claim. Here, there is no additional damages having to wait. It's simply Intercall wants to cut off its liability as soon as it can so that it can move on forward. And I don't believe that's justified, and I also believe it's afoul of Nebraska's public policy.
The problem that I'm seeing is that your company agreed to the terms of the contract. And those terms were there from the beginning. And approximately $77,000 of overbilling during this period of time.
Correct.
And so that seems to me to be enough money that should have jumped out at somebody that there was something going on that was wrong rather than waiting such a long period of time. So I come back to the issue as to whether or not this 30 days is a reasonable length of time. If not, is it too late to complain about it because you've already entered into the contract? And then secondly, was it easy to ascertain the money that was actually being billed for the time that was being spent?
Well, and to answer the last question, Justice, on the easily ascertained, we agreed, the parties stipulated to an amount. It took a while to do the accounting over periods of time. That contract term was in the contract, the Section 3.1, but so were the rates. The rates were the substance of the deal. They were the material term. In reviewing it, it was our opinion that the case precedent showed that this was afoul of Nebraska's longstanding public policy. It goes back to 1898, which I believe is 4 years after Concordia College was founded, back to that Miller v. State Insurance case where, and it's not limited to insurance cases. The cases that were cited in the briefs go beyond insurance cases. Obviously, a lot of contract law, as the court's well aware, is based upon insurance because insurance deals with contracts, and there's a lot more appellate decisions on it, but this is beyond insurance. It goes to the heart of what two commercial parties can do in a contract.
Because this was a summary judgment, was there evidence introduced as to the difficulty in ascertaining the amount of being charged on a minute-by-minute basis?
I don't believe substantively. There were some arguments as to, in response to Intercall's argument about the numerous accounts payables they have each year, we provided argument as to the numerical accounts receivable we receive and ascertaining those. And the invoices were offered, which showed the 70-plus on average detail and the fact that it wasn't broken down. But if there's no more questions, I'd like to reserve. I can't reserve. Okay. And so that was our analysis at the summary judgment. And the trial court found that it was afoul of Nebraska's longstanding public policy in that, yes, you can contract. Parties should be allowed to freely contract as they so wish. But when you run afoul of Nebraska's public policy, those terms are set aside. And And the substance was the parties agreed to a rate. That rate was different than what Intercall billed Intervision, amounting to $77,000, roughly. And that is what we filed a lawsuit on and recovered at the trial court, and we're asking the appellate court to affirm.
We find that this was not a statute of limitations issue, and so we reverse on that ground. What would you ask us to do?
Remand the case back to the trial court. There's 2 to 3 or 4 other causes of actions pending that the parties would then continue to litigate under misrepresentation theories, fraudulent theories that have not, we preserved through stipulations, have not been disposed of by the court. We wanted to address this issue so we could have an interpretation of the clause first. But obviously we're asking that it be affirmed. I do have the cross appeal. If the court affirms it, that would be governing the dispute on prejudgment interest. That was briefed and responded to by the Intercall as well. But it's our contention that the public policy has been established for quite some time. This is one of the clauses that falls into it. And merely because it's not an insurance contract, that doesn't change the substance of what was at issue.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
How much time does the appellant have left? Counsel, whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Just Judge Sinbody, just to echo what you were saying, that this was a bargain for agreement. There's no reason that they had to go with Intercall for audio conferencing services versus any one of our numerous competitors. And there's no reason that they couldn't attempt to negotiate the term out. Maybe Intercall would have said, okay, well, we need a higher rate or we need this in exchange for negotiating that out. I mean, this isn't a form contract. These are negotiated all the time. So it was, and it is a risk-shifting, clause.
Is there any evidence that in the record that shows that?
Well, about negotiating, other than the fact that they signed it. I mean, it's a contract.
It's agreed upon contract.
It's a contract. It's a bargain for exchange.
When you argue that it was negotiated out,
no, it can be negotiated. No, I'm saying, it, like any other contract, terms can be negotiated. But I guess the more other point that was brought up about whether or not it was reasonable, I mean, that's a different debate, obviously. It's not a statute of limitations clause at that point in time, and I never thought this was a statute of limitations clause. And so that we're happy to have that debate if that's going to be the situation. But looking at the actual invoices themselves, if you just look at the front page of the different invoices and you see the jump in charges, it's just like when I received my cell phone bill and I didn't realize that my daughter might have been on the phone too long or my son might have been sending too many texts out or something like that, and I have a bill that's $100 more 1 month. I don't go drill down to each one of those things. I could. I make the call. What happened? Why am I in such a harder amount? And these, if you look at the invoices that I submitted into the evidence, there are jumps and charges. All it takes is a phone call. So you don't have to sit there and do the math yourself. Intercall is available to do the math. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Matter is deemed submitted and counselor excused. Appreciate you being here today. Thank you.